The Shabbos, once again, we have no Parshas HaShavua, since it's the first day of Sukkot. So I'd like to share with you a thought on Sukkot. It says in the Pasuk, Parshas Emor, B'sukkot teishvu shivas yamim, should sit in the Sukkot 7 days, l'man yedu dor seichem, ki b'sukkot oshafti es b'nei Yisrael, botzi osam meretz Mitzrayim. We're commanded to sit 7 days in the Sukkot, to remind us of the hats, booths that Klal Yisrael lived in when they left Mitzrayim and they were in the Midbar for 40 years. The Tosefes Bracha, Torah Tamima, as a sefer on the Chumash, he asks a rather common question that's asked concerning the Mitzvah Sukkah, and that is, since the Sukkah is to commemorate the time when Bnei Yisrael were in their Sukkahs in the Midbar, why do we dafka celebrate the holiday in Chodesh Tishrei, right? If anything, perhaps Chodesh Nisan, which commemorates when they left Mitzrayim and went out into the desert and slept in Sukkahs, but why Tishrei, just some month in the middle of the year? They were, after all, in the Midbar for 40 years, and why do we celebrate it this middle of the year Tishrei, not the month when they left? This is question number one. Question number two, which I saw elsewhere, we find something very strange, even like a stira, contradiction, in the mitzvah itself of Sukkah. How so? On the one hand, we're commanded to leave our homes. The Lashon of Chazal is, say, midiras keva, go out of your diras keva, your home, where you're comfortable, and go to a diras arai, out into this hut, right, in your backyard, right, diras arai. That's on the one hand. The other hand, we find something very strange, perhaps singled out in this mitzvah Sukkah more than and no other mitzvah, that is that a mitztayer is pater from the Sukkah. Meaning you have to be very, very comfortable in your Sukkah. If there's too many flies, if it's too cold, if it's uncomfortable, you're pater. You can go into your house. We don't find this by any other mitzvah. What mitzvah do we have that we're pater if we're uncomfortable? Okay, you're uncomfortable getting up for in the morning to go to davening. Oh, you're pater if it's difficult to get up in the morning. You're pater. Oh, it's hard for me to put on tefillin, whatever. You're pater, it's difficult, uncomfortable. I don't find such a thing. The opposite is true. We have the rule of fum tzara agra, right? The more difficult a mitzvah is, the more reward you get. Okay, not that you're pater from it. And here we find something very strange by the sukkah, where you're pater from mitzvah if it's uncomfortable. And we also find that you're supposed to make your sukkah very nice. Bring out your finest kalim and make it very beautiful. So what is it? Are we supposed to leave our houses and go into this hut? Or are we supposed to be very comfortable? And if we're uncomfortable, we have to go in our house. What is it? It's a dichotomy. So to answer these questions, I'd like to share with you a story that I read in a book by Kobe Levy. And he describes this man, his name is Mr. Schultz. And he was a non-religious individual. He was involved in real estate, lived in Tel Aviv. And he was married with two kids. And he was doing quite well. He had a few million in the bank and was making a nice living. One day a friend of his, contacts him and says, listen, I got a great deal for you. I got a great deal. There's this plot of land in Romania. And it's quite large. It's 300 dunam. And if you buy it now, when it's empty, you can develop it and you can make yourself millions, millions and millions of dollars. So he says, well, how much does this cost? So he says, I can get it to you for $3 million. But $3 million, you can make, $30 million out of it. It's unbelievable. So he thought, wow, what a great deal, $3 million. So he checked, he saw that that's basically all his savings. He had basically $3 million, but he thought, hey, I can make the money can multiply. So he said, fine. He made the deal, took out all his money, invested in this land in Romania. Shortly after that, he got the shocking news that there was a freeze on the land, no building, no developing, that's it. In other words, all his money went down the drain. $3 million, and that was all his money. He was left with nothing. Came from being a millionaire to being a pauper. Lost everything. Anyways, to make matters worse, they say when it rains, it pours. Next day, he gets a letter in the mail, and he sees it's from the Mas Hachnasa, or the income tax department. He opens up the envelope. He reads it. He sees that he's being billed 17,000 shekels from the income tax. How am I going to get 17,000 shekels? Back payments, this, that. So he didn't know what he was going to do. So he spoke to some people in the know, and they told him, listen, Mr. Schultz, do whatever you want here. But one thing is never mess with the income tax department. Okay, cut corners here, do this, pay this, don't pay that, but you must pay this. So he says, what am I going to do? I don't have 17,000. I'm left with nothing after this money, the whole deal went through. So they said, doesn't matter, go borrow the money. Just go borrow the money, pay back, but just pay the income tax department. So, no other choice. So he, again, made some inquiries, and then he found out there's some loan sharks that were in this new building in Tel Aviv. And they said, go there. It's a very high interest, but, you know, you need the money. So he goes to Tel Aviv, goes to this floor, he was told, into these loan sharks. And they said, fine, you want to need 17,000 shekels, not a problem. Very high interest rate, but he had no other choice. So they count out in cold cash 17,000 shekels, and they give it to him. So he leaves the office, and he's looking around. He says, nice building, interesting, you know, building here. So he's looking around, it's brand new. So he goes up the next floor, the floor after that, and he goes to the top floor, just, you know, looking around. Sees a part that's not finished yet, you know, they're still in the middle building there on the top floor. And he goes into the room, he wants to have a look outside the window, you know, see the view. So he goes in, and all of a sudden the wind comes and closes the door behind him. Okay, so he finishes looking around, and he goes to the door to open it. Doesn't open. He's trying. He's locked in. He says, what am I going to do now? I can't get out. I'm on the top floor of this building, and I'm stuck. He didn't have a cell phone with him. There are no phones there, nothing. And he was stuck. So he starts screaming and yelling. But he says, why am I screaming and yelling? Nobody's going to hear me. I'm on the top floor of this building. There's nobody around. I'm stuck. He started getting nervous, started sweating. I didn't have no food. I know that. I got to get out of here. So he had an idea, of course. I'll just go to the window. And I'll scream, you know, and to the people down below. Okay, it's very high up, but, you know, I'll scream loud enough, they'll hear me, and they'll, you know, signal to people. So he goes to the window, screams, help, 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 help. Nobody looks. People are walking down the street, nobody bats an eye. So he's like, what am I going to do? He's getting nervous. So he says, I have an idea. He takes 100 shekels out. He has got 17,000, so he takes 100 shekels out. And he figures he'll throw it down. You know, money will fall in the street. Somebody will, like, say, hey, where did this come from? Look up and see me, and I'll signal, and they'll see me. So, well, wonderful idea. He throws the 100 shekels, falls to the street, and this little old lady's walking by. Oh, 100 shekels, picks it up, puts it in her purse, and walks out. Oh, no. Let me try that again. Another 100 shekels, throws it down, falls to the floor. Chayal, a soldier's walking by. Oh, 100 shekels. Wow, wonderful. Picks it up, walks off. I don't believe it. Tries it again. It's not working. Tries three or four bills at once. Throws it down. Ooh, money's falling down. Oh, money! Yeah. But he's grabbing, running away with the money. And nobody's looking up. He goes, it's ridiculous. I'm never going to get out of here. So he says, there's no other choice. He says, I'm going to die up here. So he takes all the 17,000 shekels, whoosh, throws it down, this cloud of bills falling from the top floor of this building onto the street, and everybody's diving for the money, fighting for the money, everybody's taking it. A few minutes later, you know, it's like in shul, you know, during an offer, they throw the candy, the kids come, clean it up, the money's cleaned up, all 17,000, and nobody looked up. Nobody looked up. He says, this is ridiculous. So he said, what am I going to do? I'm going to die. So he said, another idea. He goes, wait a minute. I know. I'll take some, you know, rubble here. They're still building. I'll take a stone, and I'll throw it. I hit somebody, you know, hopefully, and then maybe that'll, you know, cause them to look up. So he takes finds a stone, rips it down from the top. Somebody's walking by, boom, hits him in the head. He goes, "Hey, what's going on over there?" He looks up. He says, "Hey, what are you doing?" Oh, this guy. He goes, "Ha, ha." He's looking up. "Hey, it's me." And then the guy's, whatever, but he's not doing anything. So he takes another stone, throws at another person, boom, hits him also. He goes, "Hey, what's going on over here?" "Hey, some Michigan is throwing things from it." And he throws another one, hits another person. "Oh, great, he's getting, you know, people into it, you know." Finally, everybody's like screaming about some Michigan, he's throwing rocks from the top floor. And they call the police. The police come in, they break down the door, and they grab him, handcuff him, to take him away. Anyways, sigh of relief, he got out of there, and he talked to the police, explained he's not a Michigan, he's just was pushed stuck in this building on the way out. And as he tried throwing the money, it didn't work, he got their attention throwing the rocks. So, okay, eventually they believed him, they let him go. And Mr. Schultz, you know, he started thinking, started making, like, call a cheshbon and nefesh. He says, "You know what? You know, I started thinking, you know, I'm the same way. You know, I'm complaining that people don't look. Do I look? Hashem sends me all kinds of things from Shemayim. You know, like the money coming down from Shemayim. Hashem constantly gives me so much good. Gave me millions of dollars. Did I once look up? Did I once look to Hashem and say, 'Thank you, Hashem. Thank you for giving me all of this?' Never. Don't look. So I'm no different, right? And at least these people, when they got hit in the head, at least then they woke up. At least then they looked up. But I got hit on the head, I lost all my money. Did I look up then? Even then I didn't look up to Hashem." So he said, "You know what? I think it's time that I should start looking up to Hashem." And sure enough, after this Kabbalah, he gets home, he tells his wife his experience. And just then, he gets a call from his friend and says, "I have great news for you. The property that you bought in Romania that was frozen, should I continue?
Yeah.
Okay. So the property that he had purchased in Romania, the freeze was taken off, and he was now about to make his millions that he had hoped for. Once he was mekabel on himself, that he has to start looking up. Anyway, with this, thinking to answer our questions on the mitzvah of sukkah, right? We asked why Dafka and Tishrei, and we asked, it's this contradiction. On the one hand, we're supposed to go out into the sukkah, into this hut, and yet we are supposed to be comfortable. If we're uncomfortable, we can go in. So to answer this, based on our story, why Tishrei? Because Tishrei is a time, says the Torah Tmima, when it's Chag Hasif, it's when we're taking in all the good, all the grain, we're harvesting and bringing in all the good. And as we know, Pasuk says in Parshas Hazinu, Vaishman Yishurun Vivat, then unfortunately it's Dafka at these times when a person takes in the good that he tends to forget Hashem. He says, "Look, I have it good, what do I need Hashem for? You know, I'm fine." And he's literally, vayivat, he kicks, he denies Hashem. He says, "I don't need him, I'm fine." So it's dafka Tishrei time, the Hashem says, "No, go out into the sukkah. And at the same time, I want you to be comfortable there. I want you to have it good. Have it good, but have it out good in the sukkah." So when you're sitting there with the good, and if in fact if you're uncomfortable, leave the sukkah. You have to be comfortable. You have to bring in your nice kalim. You have to enjoy yourself. But you have to see, look, I'm just in this hut. This schach over my head, or meaning that I'm not in control, Hashem's in control. And he has to, what he gives me, what he takes, I'm here in the sukkah, and because he told me to be here, he kicked me out of my house, I need Hashem. I have the good, but it's not enough, I need Hashem. We don't have to go far to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the good that He does for us on a constant day-to-day basis. We shouldn't need the mitzvah sukkah. We could daily. There's a story I heard from Rabbi Menachem Stein. He says that he keeps a page in his pocket. He calls it the Daf HaKodesh, right? This holy page. When does he use it? So he gave an example. He was once in a hospital, and with his wife or certain thing, and he was talking to a doctor who was one of the chief doctors there in the ward. And for some reason, the doctor made a comment to Rabbi Stein and said, "Rabbi, I don't believe in God. Don't believe." So Stein heard this. He said, "Okay, do you mind? Maybe I'd like to speak to you a little bit. Can we go to the coffee shop for coffee?" He said, "Sure." So, sitting by with a coffee, and Rabbi Stein pulls out this piece of paper, his Daf HaKodesh. What is it? It's an article from a Time Life, it's an encyclopedia from 1949. Okay, and he turns to the doctor and says, "Doctor, let me ask you a question. I understand it's been a while since you've been in med school, but tell me something. In your estimation, how a person has veins, arteries, capillaries, blood vessels, we call them." Says, in your estimation, how, if we were to line up all the blood vessels in a human body, one person, lining up in one long straight line, how long a line would that be? All the blood vessels, all the veins, capillaries, the arteries, everything. How much of a distance would that cover? So he said, "Listen, it's been a while since I've been in school." And he goes, no, I understand. Fine. You're a doctor. Educated guess. Yes, how long? So he says, "It's quite a bit. It's quite a distance." He says, "Okay, yeah, guess." I'll say 7 kilometers. That's quite a bit. 7 kilometers, quite a bit. That's around 7 kilometers. He says, "Nope." He says, "You're close." He goes, "Yeah." At least I'm close. He says, "Yeah. It's 120,000 kilometers. 120,000 kilometers if you line up all the blood vessels of a person." He says, just to give you an idea how far, what a distance that is, he says, the circumference of the world is 40,000. It's 3 times the circumference of the entire globe a person has in his body of blood vessels. So the doctor, of course, was shocked. But he continued. He said, "Let me tell you something." He says, "I remember back in the 60s, 1960s. They were building the first building of the stock exchange in Ramat Gan, and back then it was considered quite a tall building. And they ran into a problem with the plumbing, because each floor they wanted their own bathroom up there, with water, etc., and plumbing, and they couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle getting the water pressure to all the way up to the, top floors of the building. And they couldn't handle it. So they had to get in special experts from Chutz Laaretz here just to handle, the plumbing of this building." So he says, "Just think for a minute. This is a building with a few thousand meters, okay? Here we have a human body with a lot more than a few thousand. We just said we have 120,000 kilometers, and which needs blood pressure, okay, to be at a proper, setting. And Baruch Hashem, most people, their blood pressure is fine, running constant, everything's good for many years. Who did this? Right? You need the expert plumbers to handle a few thousand meters of pressure. And here, with 120,000 kilometers and pressure of the blood and all these blood pressure, who did it?" So I don't know if the doctor became religious after that. But he definitely got his point across. We hear stories like we have to, think. We have to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we say Asher Yatzar, when we come out of the bathroom, say with tremendous kavana, right? As we see, every part of the body, how it functions, and we just give one example with the blood vessels, but it's endless. And we have to really, you know, have kavanah. We say Asher Yatzar. There's a story of a girl in Lo Aleinu. She was found. She had a tumor in her head, and of course, you know, the parents were beside themselves. The whole family. It was a very difficult time. And after the tests, and sent her to the doctor, decided they have to, you know, operate and cut out the tumor. A very dangerous operation, of course. So this woman went to a rav and asked them, you know, what can they do on, you know, ruchnistiga wise, you know, for their daughter. So he suggested that perhaps taking upon themselves to say Asher Yatzar with kavana, that might, you know, help somewhat the situation. So this woman, the mother of the girl, said, you know, thought to herself, you know, why should I just, you know, myself, my husband, maybe family, say, you know, share a tzar with kavana? Why don't we, you know, extend it? So she started to speak to more people, and tried to get like a nice group. She got in the end around 200 people that it took upon themselves to say a share yatzar slowly, carefully, word for word, with a lot of kavana. And they did this for a certain amount of time. And till the time came for the girl to have the operation. So they brought her in. But the mother insisted that they do not do the operation until they run tests again to see the hermatza. The doctor says, not necessary. We have the tests in front of us. And he says, no. You know, he says, why? He says, well, we've been saying a Asher Yatzar with kavana here. A whole group of people, 200 people, and including my daughter herself, took it upon herself. And therefore, before you do that, I want you to run tests. He says, okay, it's not necessary. But so he runs the tests, and sure enough, the test came out clean. Tumor was gone, disappeared. The power of Asher Yatzar. So it reminds me of a story. There was an avreich that came to Rav Meir Chadash, Chevron. And he asked Rav Chadash, says, tell me something. I want to know, can you describe for me, what does it mean, the godless of a person, godless of Adam? Can you describe for me, how does that show itself, the greatness of a person? So Rav Chadash said to the Avreich, listen, I don't have to describe for you, I can show it to you. Oh, wonderful, how, where, who? So he says, go to Rehovot, the Av Beis Din in Rehovot. His name is Rav Zevulun Garaz. He says, go over there, spend one night by him. You'll see there what the godless of Adam is. He says, okay, fine. So he goes to Rav Garaz's house in Rehovot. He makes up some excuse. You got stuck there, whatever. You want to know, can he spend a night by him? So he says, no problem. You know, not very hospitable. And, you know, sits him down, gives him something to eat, whatever. We didn't see anything special, you know. And that was it. He says, okay, time to retire, going to sleep. He gave the Avreich his room, and he retired into his room. The Avreich said, I didn't see anything. He says, I probably, at night, you know, he's going to get up in the middle of the night, something, you know. So he says, okay, I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to stay awake. I'm sure there's something here, you know. So he makes sure he doesn't fall asleep, and he listens, you know, carefully, is anything going on, any action in the house. Sure enough, it was the middle of the night, I don't know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. All of a sudden, he hears the door open from the Rav's room. So he quickly goes to the door, you know, he peeks through. And sure enough, he sees the Rav coming out of his room. He goes, here it is, the moment I've been waiting for. He says, so what is he going to do? He's going to, you know, say some, learn Kabbalah, I don't know, whatever, what is he going to do? So he sees the Rav walk out of his room, and where does he go? To the bathroom. It. He's just going to the bathroom. Anyways, Rav goes to the bathroom, comes out. The Avreich is still watching him, sees what's going to happen. But then he understood why he was sent there. The Rav leaves the bathroom, washes his hands, and then he goes over to his coat rack. He takes off the coat rack, his frock, you know, his Rosh Hashiva coat, takes his Hamburg, you know, his Rosh Hashiva hat, and he puts it on, and in the hallway, and he says with tremendous kavana, the bracha of Asher Yatzar. So he goes, that's the godless of a person. Here he is, he doesn't know anybody's watching him. He's not doing to impress anybody. There he is, all alone in the middle of the night. What would we do? We're lucky, throw a robe on, quickly say the bracha, get back to bed. But here, no, we got dressed up in honor of the bracha. I said the bracha was tremendous kavana. So that's the Asher Yatzar. But we have to thank Hashem for everything. I'd like to conclude with one other thought. When things go bad, it's very easy to mock your Kaddish Baruch Hu. Right? This is a famous saying, there's no atheist in a foxhole. When things go bad, and a person turns to Hashem for help, help, I'm in trouble. It can be the biggest stuffy chorus. Needs help. Who does he turn to Hashem? As we understand it. However, we can also understand why we said before, when things are good, that people tend to forget Hashem. Why? Because I don't need him. And I'm doing fine. I don't need Hashem. Reminds me of a cute joke. There was once a man, he had this meeting, very important meeting in Tel Aviv. He's right, a pneum. He was waiting years for this appointment, and they said, okay, you have to be here exactly 10 o'clock sharp, or else you won't be let in. So he goes, fine, okay, it's a very important point. There's a lot of money involved with this, whatever. So he lived in Yerushalayim, so he made sure, 10 o'clock, he left extra early, to make sure he's there on time. So he makes his way to Tel Aviv. And unfortunately, dafka that morning, there was all kinds of traffic and accidents and this and that. And make a long story short, he got there 10 minutes to 10. However, he got to the building, but he had to park the car. And there was no parking space. And the parking lot was full. And he's circling. He goes to the streets, next door, also packed. Nowhere to park. Nowhere to put his car. Time is ticking away. He had to be in there no later than 10 o'clock, or else they're closing the doors. And it's 5 to 10, and 4 to 10, and he's circling, and it's, what is he going to do? So what does every person do? Like we said, there's no atheist in a foxhole. So he turns to Hashem, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, please, I need your help, I promise. If I can get in there on time, I'll give extra money to Tzedakah. I'll learn an extra blot of Gemara every day. I'll get up earlier and daven in the first minyan every morning. Just please, please. All of a sudden, he sees right next to the building, this person pulls out of the parking spot. Sigh of relief. So, 2 minutes to go. See somebody pull out. So he quickly goes into the spot. As he's approaching the spot, he looks up to Shemaim and he says, Hashem, it's okay, I don't need your help anymore. I took care of it myself. It's okay. So that's unfortunately, when things are good, you take care of it. I don't need Hashem. I'm fine. I'm okay. But one thing strange, we mentioned before the pasuk, Vishman Yishun Vivat. Why do people kick, though? It's one thing, okay, I kind of forget about Hashem. But it says, but when we have a lot, we tend to not only forget Hashem, but we kick him. Kilu, we despise him. What's that all about? To conclude, it's a very interesting vort from the Stipler, Zatzal. He says, Legabe individuals, says, if you ever noticed, it's a strange phenomenon. And that is that people who do a toiva for, if you do a toiva for somebody, you'll find very often that not only will this person not thank you, but will even do something bad to you. Will give you bad in place of good. You did them something good, and then in fact, there's a story once the Chasam Sofer is walking with Talmidim, and he bumps into some guy who starts cursing him out or whatever. So afterwards, he turns to the Talmidim and he goes, funny thing, I don't ever remember doing anything good for this guy that he's doing this, cursing me out like this. To such an extent that people tend to do this. He says, why? Where does that come from? Why would a person, one thing, he doesn't say thank you, but does bad to you in his place? So explain it like this. He says, every human being has this natural desire to be makir tov, to want to give thanks. When you do something good for somebody, somebody would like to, say thank you. And so that's very nice. However, some people, unfortunately, have bad midos. And when you do good for them, so they feel deep down they have to give you, makir tov, but they don't want to, because they say, well, I have to be makir, I owe him one? Who is he anyways? Right, I'm much better than him, I don't want to have to thank him, and then they don't. But deep down they know they should. So what happens? Every time they see this person that did good for them, they have this very uncomfortable feeling because they know on the one hand they really should be thanking them. The other hand, they don't want to thank him. So this person is making them very uncomfortable, right? Because they're irritating them. Every time I see this person, he's irritating me because I hate this guy, right? Why? Because deep down he knows he has to thank him, but he doesn't want to thank him, and it makes them very uncomfortable. So it leads to such an extent that sometimes I not only hate the guy, I start doing bad to him. Because he makes them uncomfortable, right? Somebody makes you uncomfortable, you want to do away with them. So that's what the stipler says. I was thinking we could extend that to our Ben Adam L'Makom as well, right? When Kodesh Baruch Hu, as we said, there's all kinds of good for us. But what? People, unfortunately, have bad midos. They don't want to be makir tov to Kodesh Baruch Hu. They don't want to thank Kodesh Baruch Hu. And as a result, I have to thank him. Why? I found the parking space. You know, I should thank him. Why should I? And as a result, they don't want to be makir tov, yet deep down, every human being wants to be makir tov. So just like it works by Ben Adam Le Chavero, man to his fellow man, so too, man to God, that he starts disliking Hashem. Why? Because Hashem makes me uncomfortable. I don't want to thank him, but I know I have to thank him. So every time I think about Hashem, he gets me angry. And therefore, Vishman Yishun Vivat, when Hashem does good with us sometimes, it can cause a person, vayivat, even to score, to kick, at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kiviyachol. Because he says, Hashem's making me uncomfortable. I don't want to thank him, but I know I should. So we shall be zoicha in this Chag HaSukkos, that one of the main themes that we saw is that we have to be makir tov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank him for all the tremendous good he does, mention Asher Yatzar, with Kavana, our bodies, everything from a day-to-day basis, we say modim every day in Inshmona, so Erev Avokar V'Tzoraim, to thank him for all the nisim and niflos he does with us. And if we'll be zocha to do that, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will in turn give us continued good, continue showering us with good. The more we recognize him, the more he'll want to give us, until he gives us the ultimate gift of Mashiach Tzimkenu B'mehirav Yameinu.